to The Virtual Shift, a show looking at the seismic changes happening in healthcare with virtual care at the epicenter. Join me and my guests as we look at key cultural and policy shifts impacting how providers, payers, and patients connect, as well as how care is being reimagined both for today and the future. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Tom Foley. You can learn more about this show by visiting the program on healthcarenowradio.com, and be sure to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Foley Tom, and the hashtag, The Virtual Shift. And we have a great guest on today. We're going to talk about QHINs and interoperability. Dr. John Blair, CEO of MedAllies. John, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
So interoperability is the 2024 buzzword, if you will. Interoperability is going to be a key factor, as you know, into the overall U.S. ecosystem. So a lot going on. MedAllies was just, I believe the correct terminology is just credentialed, if you will, as a QHIN. Is that the proper verbiage?
They like to use the term designated. So we were designated, I think, on December 12th last year.
So tell us a little bit about MedAllies, and then we can get into TEFCA and QHINs and more.
Well, it's interesting you said that 2024 interoperability is a buzzword. I feel like I've been in a buzzsaw since around 2001 when I got interested in interoperability, believe it or not. Took over as the president of a large physician organization in Eastern New York in the Hudson Valley, and right out of the gate, got involved in some quality initiatives and early on realized that the communication and coordination of care that was lacking really everywhere, but much more in open communities. And we didn't have the opportunity that integrated delivery networks had. And so we tackled that right out of the gate and started first with bringing up one of the very early health information exchanges and went from there to implementing electronic health records. And then with that, realizing that those needed to be connected and got involved with ONC with various projects, ended up doing direct and have operated a direct national network for over 10 years. And when the QHINs were announced, when the TEFCA announcement came out on QHINs, I said, oh, we've got to do this because we're finally getting to some of the stuff we've been talking about for nearly two decades. And we jumped in on that. So MedAllies has been through health information exchange, traditional health information exchange at a regional level, direct secure messaging at a national level, and now operating a quality network for a little over 2 years and now being designated as a QHIN about a month ago. So that's MedAllies history and trajectory. But the interoperability buzzword for 2024 has been MedAllies buzzword for two decades.
Yeah, I will say that you and MedAllies have been at the forefront of health IT innovation much longer than what most consider the market to have existed. And when you talk about being an HIE and doing interoperability, I believe that was all way before the High Tech Act. And doing the adoption of EHR. So you did it on your own. You didn't do it with incentives. You didn't do it with anything else but the desire to do it right and do it maybe differently to address some challenges that you had. So hats off to you and MedAllies for being leaders in the market for, to your point, decades as opposed to the last couple of years, as many have done.
Yeah, it's been sheer strength of will and tenacity. I mean, I remember when it all started, I was at that point chairman of the medical council for the Taconic IPA that I mentioned that I ultimately became president of. And every month we would meet and it would degenerate into an argument with primary care blaming the specialist for never sending any information back to them when they sent a consult. Or got a consult, and then the specialist complaining that they never got any information when a patient was referred. And I'll never forget turning to the guy that I worked closely with for years, Mike Freeman, and said, okay, I can't take this anymore, Mike. We're gonna tackle this, and I'm gonna start a company. We're gonna teach the doctors how to interoperate or not how to coordinate care through technology. And I said, we're going to get this fixed in a couple of years. I can't stand it. Over two decades later, we're just getting going. So anyway, so much for my prediction, my skills for prediction. But the one thing is, I've never let go of it, never let go. And I'm kind of happy with where that I didn't, because now with what's going on with TEFCA, I think we're really going to have a shot. And before I actually retire, I think we're going to see some really great stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, timing. Isn't that part of the challenge that we all have, right? We know what we need to do. And my personal belief is that there's no unified strategy to get there. Now, we had strategy, call it strategy, adopt an EHR, otherwise you're going to get financially penalized, was the strategy, right? That's the way I look at it. And TEFCA took a long time to develop. The standards took a long time to stabilize itself. And now here we are with QHIN. How do we move faster? Because I look at the next 6 years, 2030 is when CMS has this idea that all providers will be in a risk-bearing contract. And in order to be in a risk-bearing contract, a lot of it is, to me, is dependent on data. And if you're going to be dependent on data and the analysis of that data, you need something like a QHIN, if not QHIN in and of itself, to be that go-to tool for your data. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when you talk about timing, this is, and that's what I didn't realize at the time when I made my comments, because I felt like the providers wanted this, put some infrastructure in place and we'll figure it out. And the reality is, it's way, way, way more complicated. Now, you brought up risk-bearing contracts. I would submit that if there were risk-bearing contracts or serious financial incentives from the beginning to do value-based care, then probably this would have, we'd probably shaved a decade off of this work, because then those that actually need to be doing this would want to do it. So what we've had, though, is there's not really strong financial incentives. So now what you've got to do is kind of figure all of this out, get all of these things in place. I'll talk to you about the different pieces. And then at the end of the day, you still have the biggest hurdle, which is change and change management. So even if something's better after, if you go from something that's not as good to something that's better, still you've got that bump of change between the two. And getting over that bump is the real hurdle. So, if you were getting big incentives for this, or there was real, risk, you talked about risk. If you had that in place, that last piece of the significant change management, changing what you do in your practice, changing what you do in the hospital, changing how you do all those things, would be much less of a problem. So we still got that. And, until you make it just almost perfect and really easy, you're still going to have that bump. But when you talk about timing, there's a lot here. You've got to, one, connect, get really universal connectivity. Now we're probably better than halfway there, but 70% or so of the hospitals are connected, so 30 are not. And on the ambulatory side, it's worse than that. And then when you get to post-acute care and other sectors of the healthcare industry, it's even worse than that. So step one, how do you share information if you're not connected? So that's got to get finished, which I think TEFCA will help with. Second is the data quality, what's moving around. If I query a national network right now and get back 10 CCDAs and have to rifle through those to dig out one or two things that I need, how useful is that? Let alone the quality of those documents, and let alone duplication of that stuff. So you still have a mountain of things you've got to get through to improve the data and to improve the usability. Now, again, that's another thing that's going to get hit hard with TEFCA. As Sequoia has got a data usability project, and they now have a data usability taking roots, which is implementing it. We're taking a leadership position in that. We're very strong on that. And, you know, one, you connect. Two, you start having usable data. And then the last is, again, you've got disparate systems. And, you know, you're not on one system across multiple care settings in an integrated delivery network where you can easily, you know, whoever's working on that software, the teams that are working on the ambulatory side of it and the inpatient side are all under one, you know, corporate structure and one vendor. So you don't have that. So coordinating that, I believe, will improve with TEFCA. And that's got to be done in terms of workflow. And then lastly, you're now not just going to be doing treatment. You know, you're layering in individual access services, public health, operations, which will pull in payers. And, you know, those kind of things, when you talk about timing, all have to be working. And I think those are now all going to the catalyst of TEFCA and the government kind of getting involved to a degree with this public-private partnership. Will all those pieces will come together to jumpstart this and be a catalyst in terms of the timing. But again, at the end of the day, all of that done, if you don't have the incentives and you just, I mean, you know, risk, taking on risk is an incentive because then you need to do that. You know, without that, you're still gonna have a bit of a slog at the very end, you know, training and changing how you do these things.
So you mentioned a couple of things. The one thing that came out is, yes, I'm going to submit this query and I'm going to get all this data back. I'm a doctor. I don't want to fuss with all that, right? So that's just going to have a quick turnoff switch because that's not the role of the doctor. How do we make this? I remember when you and I worked together with direct messaging when I was at Allscripts. You know, one of the things that we had problems that we had there is that you had these standards. Everybody had, I shouldn't say everybody, there was a lot of interpretation of the standards. So you had to get everybody on the same page and then the data started to flow better. But even the data, I can remember some action items where the data wasn't as valuable as we thought it was going to be in the exchange. So how's a doctor, an end user of a QHIN, realize the value of the data when in that context of I submit a query and get multiple answers?
Yeah. And, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, we think we know what they like, but, you know, we need to find out what they like from those that are users. But I, you know, in terms of valuable data, I mean, I think it's usable data. It's got to be usable. And what you're hitting at a little bit is on usability, which gets into data and also software design, you know, the human factor part of software design, all of that comes into play. But, you know, if you look at the QHINs, there's really two flavors. There are those that have a clinical data repository, and those will be able to serve up a longitudinal view. So that's probably more usable. Now, there's all issues, you know, around the CDRs and everything too, but that's a different discussion. But that, you know, you're going to probably have a better shot at usable data there. What, as opposed to those that are federated like MedAllies, we're not clinical data repository. And that's exactly the complaint I've heard, you know, for the last several years. You know, we just get back a slew of documents that are not really usable. And back in the day when we were implementing EHRs, we probably had 2,000 providers we implemented in the Hudson Valley and got everybody up and running on one of the national networks at that time and got them all using it. And a year later, only one practice was using it because it wasn't usable. Now, that vendor has fixed that problem in the interim in the last 8 years. But what we have done as a QHIN, since we are bringing back those documents, is on the fly, we've built out capability in our platform that takes those documents, cleans them up, puts them through a thing that checks them and grades them and fixes them, takes care of any kind of problems with the standards, and then we deduplicate them and create a summary view. Now, that's, you know, that takes about a minute actually on the fly, so there's a little bit of a wait, but a lot of that's, it is used what we call prefetch, which is based on the doctor's schedule or some other things, bringing those documents in so it serves up a summary. So we've done that because I knew better as a practicing provider that you're not going to be able just to do much with those documents. And we witnessed it when we implemented this stuff, you know, a decade ago. So we've created that summary view, and which then you can, through Parlevenance, go back behind that summary view into the specific CCDAs if you need to. And that summary view is also a document, so you can bring that into your EHR and pull data in. And there's going to be a search capability on that. So that's the kind of thing that makes it usable. And by the way, I mentioned the Sequoia project's data usability. We have built ours at spec to version one of that data usability document, and we're tracking so that when the next version comes out, we'll upgrade what we're building to that. So again, we're focused on usability because we know at the end of the day, you can connect all you want. If it's not usable, it's not going to be of value.
And how do you see the network as a whole, a collective of all the QHINs? So in today's world, I'm going to use the remote patient monitoring model, right? Today, a provider, maybe let's just call it, maybe it's the cardiologist that put a patient on remote patient monitoring. The cardiologist sees the data, right, which is great, but the primary, you know, other members of the care team might not because they're not in that same EHR. Do you think that this is part of how the overall ecosystem solves this data sharing problem? So if whether you're the primary, or the cardiologist, or the urologist, everybody starts to see the same data at the same time and ultimately being able to affect how they engage that patient?
Well, I don't think you're going to see the same data at the same time without some kind of trigger because, you know, you've got to activate that query to get it back. Now, that can be automated. As I said, we have prefetch that goes off the doctor's schedule the next day, or you know, if it's an insurance company that does for some triggered reason, but it's not, you're not going to update all the systems out there when anything happens automatically. You got to have that trigger. I will say this again to distinguish QHINs. Another variation on the theme are those that are going to have an EMPI and a record locator service versus not. We do have an EMPI and record locator service. So if I go out, if I'm going out for Tom Foley's information, every single place you've been, if they're connected to a QHIN, I will get back your information because in our EMPI, we know where that is. So that's a value because if we didn't know where it was, every single time we looked, we'd have to hit every single endpoint.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine tens of millions of transactions every day and you have to hit every single endpoint, you're going to bring these networks down. So having that EMPI is helpful so that we can target exactly where it is. And it's also helpful because the systems that connect to us they're going to get on the other networks that don't have that targeted capability, they're going to be banging everybody every day. So you're looking at tens of millions of transactions hitting a system, and even your large EHR vendors are going to struggle with that. For us, you're hitting our EMPI. You're never hitting an edge system because our EMPI knows where it is and then sends that back to the requester who then can hit that system because they know the data's there.
Yeah.
So those are important things to think about.
Yeah. You know, as you know, I live down here in Florida now. So I constantly hear through my mother-in-law's friends who are mostly snowbirds, they have trouble because they're, you know, typically 70 and older, and they go from state to, you know, they go home for the a short period and then come back. So, but they have two sets of doctors, right? They have the Florida doctors and they got their home doctors. And they always say, hey, I have so much trouble getting my medical records transmitted. And so I, you know, my direct messaging hat comes on and says, hey, why don't you ask for a transitions of care document to be, you know, because you can do this, right? That's what the direct messaging was all about. But the QHIN is equally as powerful, in the context of a doctor submitting a query. And if everybody is online, it doesn't matter if you're in California or Illinois or Florida, if that doctor's online, we should be able to retrieve that data. And that the doctor down here or the doctor up in Illinois should be able to get access to it and move on, right? What do you say to that use case in context of the value of QHIN?
Well, I think you laid it out exactly correctly. I mean, you and I in the day thought, well, Direct will take care of that because we thought, okay, the patient's going to say, I'm going such and such. This is my doctor in Florida. So doctor in New York proactively sends that down to Florida. Well, we were fools. That's not how it works. And just like I thought this would be fixed in a couple of years, you've got to be realistic about, you know, the wraparound amount of work that takes to proactively find out when you're going on vacation, you know, where you're traveling to, get your doctor in that other state, proactively send it down. It's not realistic. We thought everybody would be, you know, good citizens, want to do that, but it's just not realistic. And so now when you're sending from a primary care doc to a specialist, yeah, you ought to be doing that. And now a lot of that's getting automated, and that's where Direct is great. But the situation with the snowbird is perfect for QHIN. No different than a student going off to college, you know, in another state. I mean, all of those things. Now, when you see that new provider, wherever you're going, whether it's to college or whether you're a snowboard going down to Florida, that if the doctor that you see in New York or whatever other state you're coming from is connected. And I mean, we're going to be connecting about 50,000 doctors this year that were never on a network. So if they're on any of those practices and that doctor in Florida then queries, they're now going to get that information, not just from that doctor, but from the specialist that you see and others. So this is perfect for that. And, you know, the lift to achieve getting that information is much lower than the other proactive push for that situation.
So do you think it's as important for not only the doctor via the EHR to submit, to get access to that that whole medical record of that patient, as it is to a patient through an app? I dare call it a patient portal, but an app of any sorts that's connected to a QHIN to get equal access to that data?
Well, I think both should happen. And whether you've got a really proactive patient that can get their information and send it on to a doctor, or whether that doctor that snowbird is seeing down in Florida can pull it from another doctor, either way they get it. And you want to be able to have both existing, because even if a patient's not getting it to send it to another doctor, they ought to be able to get their information. So that's another great thing about QHIN. Now, individual access services, if you're connected to a network, you have to respond for the purposes of use that have been approved. Now, they've been legally vetted. They fit governance, you know, within these networks. And if you're connected and someone's hitting you for individual access, a consumer wants their information, one has to respond to that. Now, you've got to do it all at spec, but it hits the scenario you're talking about. And again, they should be able to get that.
So we are at the beginning of 2024. You used referenced the word earlier, and that's change. And I would imagine now with the QHINs being part of the ecosystem, doctors are going to have to adjust, or at least raise awareness to be able to realize the value of that and incorporate that value into the delivery of care. And the same with the patients, frankly. Change is always a challenge in and of itself in healthcare, right? You've been waiting two decades for this. So what would you say to the doctor out there, being a doctor yourself, obviously, what advice would you give them on just how to move forward with this new model?
Well, I'm hoping the doctors don't have to pay attention to it. I think the consumer, because it will be a new opportunity for them. It's even a bigger deal for them in terms of change. But if this is done right, I just gave you an example a little bit ago of one of the companies that we contracted with since we became designated that will be rolling it out to their full install base. If this is done right, this is just another part of your upgrade to the new version you're put on. So, you know, they usually put out a new version every year. It's got these set of new things. A couple of them, you know, might be really some you've got to pay a little attention to. So they develop a little tutorial that you can go online and watch for 10 minutes. That should be the most you've got to go through. You shouldn't have to know that you're on a QHIN or that you're part of TEFCA. You should just know that now your system allows you to get this information. And these are this is the screen you go to. These are the buttons you click. And that should be all there is to it. And if the vendor has done a good job, it should be just connected to the network. And all it should be is basically the practice comes on and registers their provider. They, you know, go in the system admin tool on the EHR and put in the information they need, or else they go out on a portal and enter it, and the providers are activated within a day, and they can use, and they get a little bit of training, and they use the system. That's ideally the way it should be. And that's one bit of change that providers probably sick and tired of, but you know, they get some added functionality every year or so on their EHR. So this just becomes another one of those additions.
Embedded intuitiveness into the platform, make it easy for the doctor if it's done right. So
yeah, and have some slick little training and put out the effort on some of the, because they know the practices where they have to do a little more work, and the account managers do a little more work, but you know, they've been doing this for a while, so they ought to be able to roll it. If it's rolled out like that, who cares if the doctor ever knew there's anything called a QN? I hope they never have to know that.
Exactly. Doctor, we're going to have to leave it there. Great conversation. I appreciate you joining the virtual shift.
Okay, Tom, great to see you and great to talk.
That's today's shift. I appreciate the audience taking the time to tune in. If you missed part of today's episode, you can tune back in at thehealthcarenowradio.com at the same time, 11 a.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern throughout the week. And be sure to check out the program page at thevirtualshift.co. As well, remember to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Foley Tom, and follow the show's hashtag, TheVirtualShift. I'm Tom Foley. Until the next shift.